Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 31 for September 29th. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial: On the Art of Reading Every Single Comment. This past week, well-known A-News commentator Emil wrote a new forum post on the realist basis intolerance in anarchist news editorial policy. They are seemingly upset because the collective has been deep-sixing their 500-plus word responses to articles posted on the website. Not only have we been doing this continually for some time now, but we've also communicated with Emil multiple times about why their comments are being moderated to the dustbins of time. Unfortunately, the message doesn't seem to have gotten through as they keep writing exceedingly long responses and complaining when they are unpublished. For a while there, the collective was doing Emil a solid and unpublishing their comments on the main articles and reposting the comments to the more open-ended forums. One can imagine that such a task can become increasingly routine, let alone actually trying to engage and dig into what each comment is saying. As I was not the collective member doing this, I can't say much, but I bet it felt a lot like having a full-time job. To be honest, I could personally count on my fingers the amount of times I've tried to read an entire long-winded comment by Emil. Of those times, I'd say that 9 out of 10 of them, the language was beyond overly complex for the text in question. Don't get me wrong, the long-form essay is a beautiful thing. However, there is also an art and way of engaging in a conversation and dialogue, especially over the internet, and especially on A-News. In the past, the collective has even gone so far as to publish a 60-page zine of Emil essays and comments. Not because we love it, but it's just the way we roll. Hopefully, for Emil's sake, they're saving all of their comments somewhere and perhaps one day can complain no more, as their magnum opus, largest book of all time, is published, and then maybe they can add another over 9,000-plus comment about their own writing. The Cuban writer, José Martí, comes to mind with his 28 volumes of published material one can find stacked in the low-lit, dusty bookshelves of a sweltering Havana city, with the pages blossoming flowery texts, although, to be honest, Martí is much more of a digestible read. I think I could go on talking about Emil, their comments, and all of that, but that's just part of the thing, especially the focus on one person. It holds no interest for many when stacked up against the totality of anarchist writers and texts. A-News has always been a place where the big tent of anarchist ideas are shared and discussed, whatever that discussion may look like. If one is upset about the poor discussion, please try and chime in and make honest comments about the texts or redirect the conversation towards something interesting. Believe it or not, we are human and do our best to moderate out really shitty comments. You should only see some of the shit people talk about A-News as a project and its caretakers. Some of it is even enough to make it through the fire, even though the comments are still witness to the common critique of being generally terrible. A funny, but somewhat sad, disturbing story is the time a new friend mentioned that if A-News was a real thing, it is, it should be burned to the ground, after they became upset about reading a comment there. That friendship ended pretty quickly. Trust me when I say that I find a lot of the comments upsetting as well, especially those by the infamous regulars. We're continuing to have conversations and discuss what comments look like. Part of the problem is that we're an anarchist website that publishes original content, aggregates anarchist counter-information, and allows anonymous comments. Plus, perhaps most importantly, we've made a name for ourselves. To many, this recognition is the burden and huge wooden cross we carry while crawling down a jam-packed city street with cars breathing exhaust into our lungs. It's not for the faint of heart to view. Time often doesn't allow for reading of all things, but when it does, the comments lead down a winding, forking path of lulls, hilarity, seriousness, anger, and a thousand other emotions. Here's a cheers to having a good conversation and intriguing anarchist thoughts. For more information, please have a look at the About Us section linked to in the sidebar. Hashtag smash the like button.
What's new this week? What poor people do in a hurricane. From Gods and Radicals by Dr. Bones. A blog play-by-play on how real and mystical hurricanes are, on what it takes for people to meet their neighbors, and how fragile the U.S. seems in the face of actual geographic events. Also, Dr. Bones is living a real life, unlike us poor slobs.
Vanguard America attempts to storm Houston Anarchist Book Fair from Black Rose Federation. This is a brief report about a group of alt writers briefly blockade the book fair, are locked out, and leave. Quote, the incident lasted roughly 20 minutes in total, and no confrontations or injuries occurred as the fascists gave up, circled the building in their trucks, and left the scene, according to members of Black Rose, Rose Negra, San Antonio, who were present at the book fair tabling. Members of the Proud Boys and Vanguard America were both involved in the violent Unite the Right march 1 month ago in Charlottesville, Virginia, where a participant linked to Vanguard America rammed their vehicle into a crowd of counter-protesters, resulting in the death of Heather Heyer. This incident at the Houston Anarchist Book Fair occurred immediately before lunch, which suggested prior planning and knowledge of the event, unquote.
Benjamin Tucker, American Mutualist, Part 2, A Brief Introduction to the Freedoms in the Individualist Society, from Anonymous. Number 2 in what will be a 3-part series on Tucker's thought, and this one is quite brief. It's nice that the author is upfront about disagreeing with Tucker's egoism. Quote, the main rule in an individualist, mutualist, anarchist society of Tucker would be everyone can live and do as they wish as long as they respect the same freedom for all others, and society would be based on free markets and non-exploitative wage labor, and all agreements would be made by contract. So, of course, he believed in freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of press, etc., etc. William Green and J.K. Ingalls were involved in Christian ministry as well as being individualist mutualists and influential in the individualist anarchist movement. Even though Tucker disagreed with usury, he still believed people should have the freedom to do it in the individualist society. Unquote.
Of indiscriminate attacks and wild reactions. The best written defense of the attacks against the journal ATASA and the people who talk about Mexican eco-extremism with interest or sympathy, and also the journal Black Seed. It is quite long. It combines some fair criticism. For example, perhaps one piece in ATASA is actually over-reliant on an interpretation of a complicated anthropologist. Some bad faith reading, assuming tone in someone's writing, and some outright mudslinging, aka, quote, why is no one talking about the fact that Abe Cabrera, Ramon Alani, and ATASA are on a pro-rape mission and that LBC is enabling it? Unquote. Obviously, saying this is the best of the criticism isn't saying that much, unfortunately. Picking through this piece for what is worth engaging with is a project in itself, one that's not high on my personal list, but others might be more motivated.
Longview Anarchism, Transcending the Existential Threat of Freedom, from C4SS. This is a pro-civ, pro-technology reflection on the tendencies of technology to enable fewer and fewer people to wield more and more power, in the context of, among other things, the face-off between Kim Jong-un and Trump. Quote, technology creates complexity which presents a clear path toward decentralization of power. It is no coincidence that internet freedom radicals are hunted voraciously by authoritarian regimes while secure communication channels and access to the free internet are repressed. This is because information is valuable. The withholding of information is a strategy of domination, especially when access to information clears paths of freedom, either to destroy or to create. Governments cannot repress or prohibit technology. USB drives full of Western TV shows are smuggled into DPRK, and the history of drug laws shows that prohibition of anything, much less knowledge, yields an opposite and magnified effect. Information is subject to the laws of entropy, which hold far greater sway than any national law ever could. Tyrants continue to use advances in technology to secure greater access to hegemony, but sentience hunts for cracks and anomalies. Curiosity will kill the king, unquote.
The Lady or the Tiger? Anarchic Councilism and Invisible Dictatorship in Autonomous Societies, from Anonymous. This is a long scholastic piece on how anarchists might appropriately consider how to deal with after the revolution. Hannah Arendt, Bakunin, the Zapatistas, etc., are brought in to ultimately argue for a Bookchin-esque model of anarchic councilism, and the piece more or less ends on yet another call to action. Quote, I was originally planning to address science fiction in relation to anarchism in this essay, and it's a rich vein. Robert Heinlein, Philip K. Dick, Alistair Reynolds, Ursula Le Guin, and many other authors have given us gifts of imagined future possibilities that are relevant to liberationist efforts. But history intervened in Charlottesville, and I must conclude with a heavier heart and more weighted considerations. Time is passing too quickly. There is a realistic possibility of a second American Civil War commencing within our lifetimes, perhaps more sooner than later. White supremacists and their alt-right collaborationist allies have already declared war on all people marginalized by race, gender, sexual identity, poverty, or nonconformity, and resistance to American imperialism and capitalist hegemony. Trump has welcomed Nazis into his camp, legitimized them, and made subtle promises of future atrocities. Things have gone full accelerationist as nuclear threats are traded by mirror image narcissist sociopaths, and all pretenses of the legitimacy of national governments fall by the wayside. In the U.S., most of all, in our nihilism and white insecurity, we elected a leader who manifests all that is worst in us, unquote.
Dispatches from Sao Paulo, Ayahuasca, Good Work, and Santo Daime. This is a dispatch from Alarante who records the experience of an anarchist taking drugs in a culture not his own. It is a detailed account of the effects of the drug and the rituals surrounding it.
We can still be worse. Buenos Aires, Argentina, reflections and considerations on the month following the disappearance of Santiago Maldonado, from Contra Info. This is the full story so far of the disappearance of an activist in the Mapuche struggle who was last seen in early August, and the responses to it so far, contextualized by the continuing struggles against many disappeared people and other state and corporate violence. Quote, we have seen that in the last couple years, some Mapuche communities have been leaving aside legalistic angles of struggle and have decided to occupy the properties of large landholders and portions of state land. Machines have been burned. There have been coordinated attacks on various positions on single ranches, similar to what is going on in the Walmapu on the Chilean side, unquote.
Paris, chronology of solidarity actions with those accused in the burned police car case. From Bordered by Silence. An extensive list of brief reports with linked communiques on actions, mostly in France, in solidarity with nine people accused of burning a cop car. Quote, the trial is ongoing for nine people accused of participating in the burning of a police car on May 18, 2016, in Paris. Because solidarity attacks continue to occur throughout the French territory around the trial dates, here is an attempt at an exhaustive chronology of direct actions carried out in solidarity with those accused in this case. Unquote.
Podcasts. Anarchy Radio, September 26th, 2017. An hour. Kath and co-hosts. Consequences of disasters. Responses and ways of preparation. Friendly prank caller wants to talk about weather manipulation. Various disasters, oil spills, scarcity of sand, etc. Main way people are dying are, quote, deaths of desperation, unquote. Increase in sexually transmitted diseases. The industry of sleep. Jay-Z keeps his toe on the anti-LBC brigade. Action news, sabotage groups that detoured the initials BMW and Audi. Turkish government car torched in Hamburg, etc. Catherine talks about the distraction of the drama, cites Vietnam as an example of how the U.S. has been here before. Jay-Z complains about the low level of discourse. Sex Robots Uprising could happen. Amish losing their fight against tech.
The Final Straw Radio, Coalition for Immokalee Workers on Irma Relief and Jalea Muntakim. An hour and 10 minutes. Whole lot of final straws this week. Sean Swain starts at 4:50. He suggests that the solution is violence and uses the example of yet another white cop murdering a black man and getting acquitted. Also, to those who know how to make homemade pepper spray, that info should be made available. William Goodenough's interview with Lupe starts at 11 minutes, discusses relief for Hurricane Irma survivors, and connections between the Coalition for Immokalee Workers and anarchists. The second part of the Prison Radio Show interview with Jaleel starts at 45 minutes.
TFS Radio, Radical Rush and Supporters of Comrade Malik Washington. An hour. Sean starts at 3:50. He discusses how prison managers allow some violence between inmates, the farcical expenses prison management finds necessary, and the dehumanizing effect of working in prisons. The chat with Bursts and Beck starts at 9:40. Beck works with Radical Rush at University at North Carolina in Asheville. Radical Rush is a disorientation project to introduce incoming students to radical perspectives. The interview with Malik's supporters starts at 20:50. Quote, Comrade Malik, as he's known to his friends and supporters, is currently in solitary confinement in Texas at Eastham Unit, where he was placed as retaliation for coordinating a work stoppage during last year's nationwide prison strike on September 9th. In addition to his work around the End Prison Slavery movement, Malik is a member of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee of the IWW and the deputy chairman of the New African Black Panther Party prison chapter and is active in the Fight Toxic Prisons campaign. Malik has an extensive network of support nationally and even internationally, both within and outside of the anarchist community. The interviews we will share today show the diversity of backgrounds, motivations, and stories that go into forming a support network for those engaged in revolutionary struggle while incarcerated, unquote.
The last The Final Straw Radio episode this week is a special one, The Catalan Referendum, An Anarchist Perspective. An hour. This is a special Final Straw broadcast in which Bursts interviews an unnamed English-speaking anarchist resident of Spain on current political events between Spain and Catalonia, bringing up more general questions about nationalism and anarchist thought, a continuing debate slash fight with what can be boiled down to, if I may oversimplify, cultural respect on one side and anti-state clarity on the other. The interviewee speaks to recent history in the area, the impact of language on culture, various recent repressive acts and raids, and some of the huge popular rebellion and resistance. Also discussed are pro-pacifism peace police and the topsy-turvy scenario of brave politicians and cautious cops. The interviewee comes down on the side of cultural respect with caveats and does address that likelihood that our enemies on the side of Catalonia are more likely to seize power. Especially given the lack of information about these current events in anarchist circles, this interview is useful and informative. He also raises the reality that most conflicts we participate in are dichotomies that will strengthen the state no matter which side wins, and that anarchists have the particularly difficult task of creating and promoting an option that is none of the above.
Topic of the week. Bullshit jobs and anarchist integrity. How does one make a living in this world and still have some kind of integrity as an anarchist? Usually this means handling money, and often that means having a job, and most likely that job is bullshit. But of course, none of this necessarily has to be the case. Various sub-philosophies within anarchism have been advocated for as to how to do this, namely illegalism, stealing for a living, agorism, black market businesses, rewilding, hunting and gathering, and communalism, living and working on communes. But even though these approaches exist, very few anarchists seem to actually practice this. And those who do practice it don't tend to do it for very long, or they treat it like some kind of side hobby to engage in their free time, off work. that is, which really pays the bills. And then, on the other end of the spectrum, there are ways of making a living that are absolutely off-limits for anarchists. Usually these are considered to be jobs in law enforcement, the military, and being a prison guard. Sometimes the sphere of forbidden jobs is expanded to include anything where one is employed by the government, or where one is a boss who has the ability to fire or hire other people. But even with that, there are anarchists out there who have those kinds of jobs. So the zone where one can lose one's anarchy card based on one's profession then gets to be a bit murky. So between these two extremes, pristine revolutionary purity on the one hand and complete hypocritical douchebaggery on the other, how do we navigate life in this world dominated by capitalism and statism, maintain some sense of dignity and integrity as anarchists, and still reliably get food on our tables and keep a roof over our heads? And once you figure that out, please put in a good job reference for us. Thoughts?
It's a well-written piece because I feel like it describes maybe what I see a lot more outside of where I live. I see, you know, in other cities we visited or made aware of anarchist spaces that exist, and you know, yet I live in a town in which there's, you know, the anarchist spaces. Maybe the bar one night, somebody's front porch the next, you know, or a meal for lunch or something. But that's mostly just because most of the people that I know, you know, work pretty crummy jobs. And saying this is someone who's in his mid-30s and who knows a lot of other people in their mid-30s and late-30s, some of whom with college degrees, others without a college degree who aren't really sure what 10 or 15 years after 40 looks like. And, it's a bit of stress, you know, in these times, but I don't feel like we, in our conversations, our group of friends really worry too much as how we deal with that as anarchists. I mean,
for you, the question is about survival, not about anarchism or how to put anarchism into practice.
No. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things, maybe growing up in a town where, you know, it's the chasm between a well-paying job that is somewhere aligned with the military-industrial complex, mm-hmm. or the other side, which is a service industry job. Coming up and seeing this, what awaited us, you know, there was probably, I don't think I know anyone that went kind of into the other end of things, but most folks definitely still work in retail jobs. And I think for us, like coming up, you know, there wasn't a strong academic tendency. So we didn't have like a well-read Marxian left to indoctrinate us in reading groups with readings of Marx. But I think it was maybe Bob Black's Abolition of Work that had the biggest impact, and which the joke, you know, used to be, why unionize the Circle K when you can burn it to the ground? You know, what worker wants to put in the time to unionize a source of misery, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I always think about this topic along the lines of keeping a really, like what I would call a firewall between what I do for money and what I do for love. So I don't actually think very much about quote-unquote, my anarchist values while at work, other than the fact that, you know, I do have a hair trigger when it comes to bosses and arbitrary, you know, authority. Like, I don't mind actually, you know, doing a thing for X number of hours a week or whatever, but I definitely mind being told what to do, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in conversations about owning a business and what that kind of firewall looks like. I remember an anarchist many years ago passed through town and told me something along the lines of that, you know, if I owned a business, you know, I'd run the business one way and then I'd be an anarchist outside of the business. But, you know, I'm also pretty sure that no matter what you do, if you're an anarchist or back 15, 16 years ago, when it feels like a lot more people in the kind of different anarchist groupings would join the IWW, it really doesn't matter what your intention is. If you're an anarchist that goes to own a business, you're not in the one big union anymore. Whether you want to have an anarchist-oriented business or a more straightforward capitalistic enterprise in which you know, maybe some of your values carry over, but it's essentially, you know, it's a by the numbers business.
Yeah, it is sort of hard to believe that the IWW can maintain that kind of theoretical consistency, given how much the world has changed. But I think that that does speak to the fact that its demographics, in other words, its membership, is either young people working service industry jobs or older people who've had established union jobs for a long time.
Yeah, and again, I live in a state, you know, we were one of the first right-to-work states, and we're a state with like a really long radical labor history. The IWW was a huge force in Arizona from 19-teens up through the mid-20s pretty much. But I remember that being like a big thing, that if, you know, you join the IWW, if you get the ability to hire or fire, you know, you're out of the union.
Yeah.
Whereas now, it feels like it's a lot more difficult where, you know, if you're especially working at some kind of precarious job, or you're working some kind of as like rideshare or, you know, delivering food or something. I mean, the terms of employment aren't anything like, you know, what they were 15 years ago when thinking back on this moral dilemma.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, does an Uber driver own their means of production? Kind of.
Is there, or sometimes now, I mean, Uber's kind of has one-upped the driver to even have that ability by now leasing cars to the drivers. You really are just one step away from, you know, what they've already got coming, which is the self-driving vehicle.
Well, personally, I think that that's still a big bunch pile of PR. I don't actually think that the costs really work for that. But I mean, obviously, I see the same PR you do, but I can't believe in my lifetime that the costs are going to be worth it to put a whole computerized setup just to drive a car around.
Well, being the leader in jobs that Arizona is, once the first vehicle accident happened in California of a unmanned or a driverless vehicle accident occurred, Arizona stepped up and was like, hey, California, no problem, Uber, come to Arizona. So here in Arizona, we have, especially in the Phoenix area, you see dozens of these vehicles every day. However, there's still two humans sitting in the front seat, one driving and one, you know, taking notes on what the vehicle does. So,
yeah, for sure.
But it definitely looks more of a realistic possibility from where I'm sitting, just because, you know,
you're seeing them in town. Yeah,
we see them often. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I'm not saying it's not technically possible. I absolutely know that that's true. But I think the cost is going to be significant for, you know, another couple decades.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, just to come back to the topic of the week. So, how do you feel like you've navigated this particular tension? In other words, you spoke to the circle of people around you who more or less are trying to survive rather than thinking about their political integrity in the context of a job. Do you think? As your peers age, do you think that they'll have different solutions, or do you think that by and large the nature of Arizona is that suffering is the new standard? And that, yeah.
I think it's also the old standard here. It's one we just grew right into. I don't know. I think a lot of us, I mean, I see people hit their mid-30s and they leave the state, you know,
really?
At the same time. Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, take a look in, you know, up and down the coasts, or, you know, maybe in the eastern U.S., but you'll see a lot of people from Arizona that get out of here. Last year, even amongst the non-political friends, I think like 10 people moved to Portland from Arizona that I can think of.
Interesting.
And these are, some of these people are a couple of years older than me, but yeah, they've given up. We've given up hope here.
No, of course, I now realize that two of your close friends live in the Bay Area.
Only two. But this is, I mean, it's a place either where you're young and you struggle, or you're old and come to retire. And the people who are old and come to retire do bring a politic with them. And it's a politic that I don't feel like necessarily was a part of the landscape here when I was growing up. And this is despite Arizona being a hub of the John Birch Society and other right-wing movements, which is just a real hard-nosed Midwest racism. And this is the, you know, the people that voted in someone like Joe Arpaio or the right-wing political forces here. But these are retirees, and at this point, you know, they have a politic that, you know, actually wields some influence here, whereas all of us anarchists keep our heads down and hope to survive another month, you know.
If context didn't exist, what do you think would qualify as a job where you had anarchist integrity? In other words, if you didn't live where you live.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's where maybe like churning, if we all, you hear about like these like Cuban anarchist organizing circles at like cigar factories, you know, where,
right.
So I wonder what did they think of that work, you know, were they thinking like, this is it, you know, we can like turn this around. We're reading Bakunin today, and you know, tomorrow we all own this.
The most anarchist job would be the reader, and all the rest of the room are probably anarchists, but haven't ascended to reader status.
I wait for the day that I can be a reader.
No, I mean, so in the future it'll all be iPhone factories with.
maybe the other way of looking at it is they see me rolling, they hate me, and it's really the reader that wants to be rolling. I just wanted to put that in there. That was so bad. But yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, we move between, you know, Arizona where people, you know, who live here, and there's a lot of people do drugs or, you know, and work precarious jobs, or you look at China and there's people making iPhones, trying to throw themselves off buildings, or you look at other, you know, parts of the world where people are, you know, 12 years old working in factories. And I take a lot of look at work, and I'm not sure what the anarchist component of work is.
This is not where anarchy is to be found. That's for sure. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah, but I'd also like to really just, you know, offer a great pitch right now to join my union, Aragorn.
And sure.
It's a good question, and it's one that I have a lot of experience in really defining what my politics are in accordance with my work, because I don't see a lot of anarchy in work.
Well, let me ask the question in a different context then, just to wrap this up. Where do you have anarchist integrity? What aspect of your life?
Maybe the closest thing is in some of the friendships I have, and in some of the projects that have been meaningful to me. But the places where I think most fondly, you know, on any of my anarchist organizing or anarchist projects is in good times and having laughs, and, you know, whether or not that was in the streets or at the bar or, you know, working on a piece of writing or something. I mean, those are, or seeing someone I haven't seen in a while and throwing some ideas around. Those are the things that kind of inspire me to, you know, think of creating projects that change how I think of things and how other people, you know, conceive of what it means to be an anarchist.
Thank you very much for your time.
Deadpan voice singing Tin Pan Alley songs, panhandling in front of tourists with the camera phones. Get it how you live, or live till you get it. Get it in. When the stash low and it's no cash, get it in. And you're riding no L's, no tags, get it in. And she looking like you ain't gon' smash, get it in. But she got her legs up on the dash. Shorty say this out of. Get that work, make that work, work. Get that work, make that work, work. Get that work, make that work, work. Get that work, make that work, work.
See, I get it, I whip it, I flip it, I pocket the profit. Don't know when to stop it. They calling me Griselda the harlot. My blonic's erotic. I can't walk, the hill is enormous. The arm in the armrest. These names.
The Weekly Anarchy 101 Question and Some Answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org. This is a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. Most questions on the site have a lot of commentary that we don't end up reading, but is certainly at least half the fun. The question this week is, why do some anarchists say they're anti-anarchism? They make a big deal about anarchism. I guess instead of saying anarchist ideas, I don't get it. Answer number one. The idea is that any set of ideas can get frozen and become more of a problem than a help. As an example of this tendency in common language, people talk about abiding by the letter of the law instead of the spirit of the law. And here is that same concern that people have stopped paying attention to what is important and are focusing on the most superficial indicators. Another example is in the Bruce Lee movie when he is schooling a student and points to the moon. The student looks at his finger and gets chastised for not looking at the moon in all its heavenly glory. People who talk about this usually use the word ideology as a problem, i.e. defining ideology as frozen ideas, and refer to anything ending with ism as an indication that that freezing has happened. Answer number two. Bob Black and others make the distinction of anarchism versus anarchy, anarchism being a set of theories, whether left anarchism or anarchism more broadly, whereas anarchy is the lived experience outside of or despite authority. As always, if you don't like these answers or have a question of your own, come to Anarchy 101 and join the conversation.
Is that the truth he says? The pain is easy too many words.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Jackie, the editorial written by a member of the collective. It was produced and narrated by Chisel and a friend. We thank Aragorn and Drew for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are available at littleblackheart.com, news and up-to-the-minute commentary at anarchistnews.org.